Well, hello, Saints. Okay, carrying on with our studies into Jacob and the life of this great saint. Last time we looked at chapter 8 of Genesis, which was all about this new relationship, really, that Jacob had come into. He met God on his journey toward his uncle, and God had given him specific promises that he was going to be with him, that he was going to bless him, that he was going to make his descendants numerous, and all of these things God had said he was going to do about it. And chapter 28 of Genesis is really Jacob's first encounter with this God that had always been with him, but now Jacob was actually aware of it. So after that encounter, he set up a pillar and he worshipped God. So he's about to get a little skip in his step, and in chapter 29, he carries on with his journey. So today we'll have a look at chapter 29 and just some of the things that we can glean from there, which may be of benefit to us. So chapter 1 of 29, so Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and he saw a well in the field, and behold, there was three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks, and a large stone was on the well's mouth. Realizing that from where he first met God, he's got a journey of about 450 miles, on foot and alone. So he's covered a huge amount of distance, and he's all alone at this point, going toward his uncle's land. And in these pretty much first 17 verses, you see the providence of God, that God was actually undertaking for him and of all the people that he should meet when he get there, it's his family members. So in verse 3, now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." And then he said, "Look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." Now while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and he watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And this verse probably shows that the realization of traveling 450 miles, the realization that the God, who he didn't know, had now come into a relationship with him, was actually undertaking for him. I suppose that all of that relief must have welled up in Jacob, for him to be kissing Rachel and weeping, when the realization that God is actually undertaking for him, of all the people that he came to meet, he got on this big long journey, and sure enough, it's to his uncle that he finds himself. And it must have been a huge relief to Jacob, so much so that he overflowed with tears. So verse 12 says, "And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. And then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and he embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all of these things. And Laban said to him, 'Surely you are my bone and my flesh.' And he stayed with him for a month." So God had sent Jacob to meet this Laban for a specific reason and a specific purpose. And he's staying with him for about a month. So he's he's living off, he's freeloading off Laban for about a month. He's in the home and he's eating all the food and he's enjoying all the privileges of Laban's household. And after about a month, Laban's like, well, this can't go on forever. If he's here, he's got to earn his way. So in verse 15, Laban says to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Now here comes the interesting part. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. So straight away we're introduced to these two girls. Now he's already met Rachel in the desert, but he's introduced to Leah here also. Now Leah means delicate eyes, timid, weak eyes, all of these things. So that's the picture that you get of the eldest daughter. And Rachel, it says, now Laban had, so Leah's eyes were delicate in verse 17, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel. You got a big contrast between these girls. I always remember there was a Scottish preacher called Billy Strachan, and he used to call Rachel the Raquel Welsh of the desert. You've got a contrast between these two. One is timid, delicate eyes, weak. She seems to, there's something about her that's not quite lovable. And on the other hand, you've got this absolute bombshell of a Rachel. She's a bombshell of the desert. She's beautiful of form, beautiful of appearance. She's an absolute honey. And Jacob falls for her. Straight away, it was love at first sight. And he wanted to marry her. So he says to Laban, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban responds by saying, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. So Laban's getting 7 years of free labor for his daughter. That seems a long time. How long would you work for nothing for the wife or the partner that you have? Would you work 7 years for free for the love of your life? But we see with Jacob that it only seemed a few days to him because of the love which he had for her. It must have been some love for it only to seem like a few days. And then in verse 21, then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. So 7 years have been ticking over. Week after week, it crosses into a year. Jacob ticks off that year. Then he goes through the weeks, and then he goes through the months, and then he ticks off another year. He does that over and over and over again, and he knows exactly how much time 7 years. He's been longing for this day. He's been working his guts out for Laban with the hope of getting this beautiful bombshell of a girl to be his wife. So he's longing for this day. And when the 7 years is up, Jacob knows when 7 years is up. My days for her are fulfilled. Give me my wife, he says. So Laban, okay, he's honourable to his word to this point. And Laban in verse 22 gathered together all the men of the place, and they made a great feast. Such was the case with the Jewish weddings. The feast would go on for a week. It was a big festive time where all the people around would come, and this must have been quite a feast with much eating and with much drinking. And it was feast time for Laban to give away his daughter. Now verse 23, now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter, and he brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. What is going on here? Now there must have been discussion between these two, Laban and Leah. Now at what point during the 7 years did Laban come up with this plan? He must have been watching Jacob, and he must have been thinking, this guy's a good worker. He's working for me for free for 7 years. But he thinks that he's pretty quick. He thinks that he's pretty clever. But I've got another thing coming for him. He doesn't know what's coming. At what point during those years did Laban come up with this plan that Jacob thought that he was going to get Rachel, but Laban was going to give him Leah? That is the ultimate swindle, to marry off one daughter as another. To think that someone is getting one girl, but he actually ends up getting another. And I'd love to know at what point Laban came up with this plan. But he did. And it had to be discussion between the two. Obviously, Leah must have had to have been obedient to her father's plan. It puts her in an incredibly tricky position. But she goes along with it. Well, there's nothing in the scriptures to say that she objected, or she probably had to do the will of her father, as is the custom in many of these things when daughters are married off. So Leah and Laban have this plan, and in the evening he takes Leah and he brings her to Jacob. So then, and all of these things, I'm not sure how this actually happened. Must have been the festive occasion, possibly. And so verse 24, and Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as his maid. And verse 25, so it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? The first light of dawn in verse 25, it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. Now, when it says, behold, it was Leah, you can just imagine the scene. Here he is cuddling up to the woman that's next to him. And at the first light of dawn, the first gleam, when everything becomes apparent, he leans over toward what he thinks is his beloved Rachel. And, it's another woman. It's Leah. Behold, it's Leah. What is this you have done to me? He says. There's few passages in the Bible that I would love to have been a fly on the wall. I would love to have actually seen his reaction when he realizes, first thing in the morning, that the woman that he's lying next to is not the woman that he's just worked 7 years for, the love of his life. He had a great love for Rachel. I would love to have seen the expression on his face, or the realization of what has just occurred to him. What is this you have done to me? Now, there's an irony in this, what is this? Could not Esau have cried the same thing to Jacob? What is this you have done to me? You've swindled me out of the birthright. You deceived and you swindled me out of the blessing. Could not Isaac have cried the same things? What is this that you've done to me? You deceived me by portraying yourself as another, as the other brother, so that the blessing would go to you. And I blessed you, and you shall be blessed. What is this you've done to me? It's amazing how God can flip everything. And he does that at times. He'll flip everything so that the swindler becomes swindled. Or another example would be, remember Haman, how that he erected the gallows so that the Jews would swing from the gallows, but only to find and the realization that the very gallows that he erected, his own legs would be swinging from. And at that point, I would love to have seen his face when all these things dawned down upon him, that the very thing that he tried to do has now come back upon him. And it's the same concept here with Jacob. The very deceit and the very swindling and the very cunning that he portrayed in the past, it's all been turned around. And he himself finds himself on the other side of that. He's the one that's being swindled. He's the one that's been taken advantage of. So Laban got him. Laban tricked him and he deceived him, and Jacob was made the fool. And Laban said in verse 26, "It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn." Notice something. Jacob now has to observe the rights of the firstborn. What an irony. Everything is turned around. Back in his own country, God would have made a way for him. He was chosen before they were even born to receive the birthright and the blessing. God had chosen Jacob over Esau. But Jacob, because he was cunning, because he was a swindler, because he was incredibly shrewd, he sought to take it by his own means. But God would have had a way of getting it to him without all that deceit, without all the lying, without all the trickery and the swindling between Rebekah and him. But now, being sent to his uncle, who is very much up to the task, Jacob has to observe the rights of the firstborn. What an irony. So in here you see the hand of God upon Jacob. He loves him. He's his son. But he's not going to get away with the way that he's been behaving. So Laban, he's more than a match for Jacob. He ends up marrying off both his daughters, and he actually gets a premium price for both. For we see in verse 27, "Fulfill her week concerning Leah, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve me still another 7 years. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, so he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife also." So what this means is that he was deceived. He got Leah. He had to fulfill a week, probably the wedding feast week with Leah, and then he was given Rachel. He got her as his bride at the end of that week, but he still had to serve another 7 years of free labor for Rachel. So Laban did pretty well out of this agreement. He married off both his daughters, and he got a premium price. He got 7 years of free labor out of Jacob for them both. Now, Jacob was a sucker. He wanted one wife, and he actually ended up with two. But he had to work twice as hard to actually get what he desired. He got had. He got conned by someone that was more shrewd and more cunning and more trickier than he himself. And God has a way of sorting us out. God has a way of highlighting the very things that are not desirable in our life in a relationship with him. We are his workmanship, it says in Ephesians. We are his workmanship. God is the potter, we are the clay. He molds and he fashions and he beats and he applies pressure and he buffets. God disciplines Hebrews. We'll have a little look at Hebrews in a minute. He disciplines those that he loves, those that are called his sons. And part of his discipline is actually allowing things like this to actually happen to us. So why Laban? Why did God send Jacob to a person like Laban? Well, I believe that he sent him to Laban because it was actually God's plan to let Jacob see in another man all that was hateful about himself. He sent him to Laban because Laban was more of a match for the Saint Jacob. He was more cunning, he was more tricky, he was more deceitful, he was shrewd. And for 20 years of Jacob's life, straight after he came into relationship with God, he was buffeted by this man Laban. For 20 years he had this conflict of this man that was trying to get one up on him all the time. Later on we find that not only did he deceive him out of his wife so that he got an extra wife, but he changed his wages 10 times over the period that he was with him. He was always rubbing him. He was always buffeting Jacob. Jacob had to always be on his toes, but Laban was more than a match for this saint. 20 years of pressure, 20 years of buffeting, 20 years of rubbing and rubbing and rubbing, so that Jacob could actually see what he hated about Laban was actually in himself. These very same principles that were in Laban were also in Jacob, and it got him. It really got him. If it was left up to us, we would only choose nice people to be around. We would only choose nice conditions, favorable conditions, a life full of ease, pleasure, no conflict, no struggle, no trouble, no buffeting situations. We would, if it was up to us, we would just choose everything to be plain sailing, still waters. But God doesn't allow that for his saints. How much conflict do you have and do I have in our life? In your work situations, in the people that are around you, do you have a Laban? Do you have someone that is always trying to get something over you? Do you have someone that is always trying to get the better of you? Someone that you have to stay on your toes all the time? Do you have someone in your life like Laban that is always getting your back up? Oh, I just can't stand that person. They really annoy me. Sometimes the very thing that we annoy, that we get annoyed about in others, is a principle in our lives also that God actually wants to deal with. The very thing that irritates us is sometimes a big part of our character. And God will send a Laban into our life. He'll send someone that just buffets us, someone that gets the better of us, someone that highlights the very things that God actually wants to deal with in our lives. We see them in others, but sometimes we don't see them in our own lives, and it's these things that bring it out. In our family situations, this is the founding family members of the nation of Israel. What a mess. They're all cunning, they're all shrewd, they're all... Rebecca was just like her brother Laban. In fact, Laban, they're pretty similar. They both had schemes and plans of how to work things out. But God will quite often bring a Laban into our lives. Now, Jacob was 20 years in this field, 20 years under this man. And God allowed him these 20 years to work on him, to work on his character, to highlight that he also was incredibly cunning, shrewd, and deceitful. And he'll do the same in our lives also. Now, Hebrews, as I just said, talks about that God disciplines those that he loves. And I'll just turn to the passage and we'll read Hebrews chapter 12, from verse 3. Now, consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. Now, remember that God speaks to us as sons, and as a parent, we don't go and discipline the neighbor's kids. We discipline our own kids. And God disciplines those that he calls sons. Now he says, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and he scourges every son whom he receives. What that is saying is that God deals with us as a parent would, with all love and with all grace. But as a loving and gracious parent, we don't let our kids get away with everything. There's times when they need to be disciplined, and there's different forms of discipline. There's times that we allow situations to actually work on them, knowing that it will be painful for them, but they have to learn certain things. And God does exactly the same with us. And this is what God has done with Jacob. He sent him 450 miles to a man that was going to buffet him and annoy him and change his wages, steal or deceive him out of the wife that he thought he was getting so that he would end up with two wives, one he wanted and one he didn't want, but he had to take her anyway. And this is what God is doing. He is disciplining his son for his own purposes. Now he says, now in verse 7, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. In other words, if you don't have conflict, if God doesn't deal with you and discipline you when you step out of line, then you're illegitimate. You're not actually a son. Furthermore, we have had in verse 9 fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. And now here's where we get into the real purpose behind any form of discipline, any form of buffeting that comes into our lives, any form of hardship or trials or things that are uncomfortable. It's actually, God sees it as profit. It's for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Remember, we are his workmanship. It's his purpose that we be conformed into the image of his son. And as Philippians, I keep saying, 1:6 says, for he who began a good work in you will continue and form you into the image of the Lord Jesus Christ. He will continue the work that he has begun. Can we hinder that work? Yes, we can. Because in verse 5 it says, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. You can despise these things. You can kick up your heels. You can hate the circumstances that you find yourself in. You can blame God. But we're not to despise these things, because it's from his loving hand. And also, don't be discouraged, he says. Those two things we need to guard against always. And when we find our lives being in places of buffeting and trials and situations that are uncomfortable and annoying. Now he says in verse 11, now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present. Isn't that the truth? But painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. In other words, to be trained by situations means that you don't despise what's happening, you don't get discouraged about what's happening, but that you realize that in the providence of God, he allows all types of situations to come into our life for his purpose and for his benefit, that you may be conformed into the image of his son. Jacob had to spend 20 years with Laban, because it worked and it rubbed and it grated his character, which God wanted him to see what he was really like. Before Jacob could be name changed to Israel, he had to have a realization of what he was actually like in his humanity. And Laban brought that out. He brought it out into the open. So God treats with us as sons, and therefore in verse 12 he says, strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed. Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord, looking carefully lest anyone fall short of the grace of God. Don't fall short of the grace of God. The discipline of God, that he allows these circumstances to come into our life, is his grace. It's the grace of God. And don't let any root of bitterness spring up, causing trouble. and by this many become defiled. Whenever there's bitterness, it spreads like a cancer, and people all around become defiled because it's sour. Bitterness is sour and it spreads. So in this Hebrews, it's pretty much just it's saying what we know, that God loves us and God is gracious toward us, and he sends people like Laban into our lives, people that annoy us, that buffet us, that get one over us continually. So Jacob needed this. He needed it, and it was a 20-year period. That's a long time. How long have you been in your situations? 20 years? 20 years of buffeting? 20 years of being all your wages changed multiple times, 10 times? The wife that you wanted, you've got, but you've also got another one that you don't want. All of these things worked upon this Saint Jacob. So we'll get back to Genesis 29 and we'll finish the rest of this chapter. Because he's not only has Jacob got conflict with Laban, but he's also got conflict in the home. His whole life down here, 20 years, was not easy for this saint. So in Genesis 29, we'll get to verse 31. We saw that in verse 30, Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. So you're presented with, you've got conflict not only with Laban, but you've got conflict in the home between the two wives. And that can't have been a nice home environment to actually be in. There would have been conflict here between Leah and Rachel. You think about what went on, the fact that Rachel probably thought she was getting this man Jacob, only to find that Laban had already talked with Leah that she was the one that was going to be. There would have been conflict between these two sisters. Now, Leah was unloved. Rachel was loved by Jacob, but Jacob didn't really love Leah. And that would have been a horrendous experience for actually Leah to be in. She's put in a really hard predicament. She's given to a man that actually doesn't love her, loves the other sister. And she wanted Jacob's love. So in verse 31, we see, now when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Oh my goodness, how many, look at the conflict here. One is going to be a fruit bearer, and the other one is going to be barren. The one that Rachel loves is going to be, that Jacob loves is going to be barren. And the one that he doesn't love is going to produce all the kids. So there's conflict here all over the place. So you can actually see a progression in Leah's life. I think her predicament is quite hard because she's unloved. She's given to Jacob, has to obey her father. But you see a progression in the kids and in the names that she names them within her own relationship with God. So in verse 32, so Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. Now Reuben's name means seer's son, and it's like Leah is really pleased that she's actually born an heir to Jacob, and through their heir she is hoping that her husband would actually love her. Now she's been given a son. God has opened her womb and a son has come forth. Now Jacob will love me. This is what she is hoping. So she names him seer's son. Then she conceives again and she bore another son. And because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also, and she called his name Simeon. And his name means hearing. And the context about all that is that still she isn't receiving the love from Jacob, but God has heard that I am unloved. So she's still desiring this love from Jacob. Now the third son, she conceived again, and she bore a son. And this time my husband will become attached to me because I've borne him three sons. Therefore his name will be called Levi. Now Levi means joined. So again, she's wanting this union between her and Jacob as his wife. And so she names the next one joined. She's still hoping that her husband would become attached to her. And then her last son, and she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah, and then she stopped bearing. Now Judah's name means praise, and you get this picture that she's content at last with her relationship with God, and she names his name praise. All the other ones, it's about wanting the love of her husband, but the last one is about praising. Now I'll praise God. And you get this picture of someone that has moved in her relationship. She wants the love of one, but doesn't get it, but finds contentment in God in the end. And in all of this, you actually see the sovereignty of God. These two women and their maids, as it goes on, are the bearers of the nation of Israel, of the 12 tribes. And you see with God's sovereignty, even though she was unloved, in her line you've got the Levites who are separated. You've got Judah, by which the seed Christ would come. He is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. So Leah was incredibly blessed, even though she was unloved. She has twice as many kids as Rachel. And you wonder whether that's as the firstborn, they get a double portion. She bears twice as many kids, even though Rachel is barren up to this point. God does open her womb and she has two. But there must have been such conflict within this family. Much conflict. One is pumping out the kids and the other one can't have any. And then they get their maids involved and they start having a few kids. There's conflict everywhere. And poor old Jacob, not only did he have conflict out in his workplace tending with the sheep, but he's got it in the home. I think it's Lightfoot that says there's a little bit of typology here. It's worth mentioning. You probably can't read too much into it, but Lightfoot says that Leah is a picture of the church and Rachel is a picture of the Jewish nation. Jacob loved and desired Rachel first, but he got Leah. So you've got a little picture here between the nation of Israel and the church. Leah being weak-eyed and timid is, you could say, is a picture of the church. As Gentile believers, we only see so much of the scriptures because it isn't our culture and isn't our context. You get a messianic believer and they understand so much more because it's a part of their culture and a part of their racial being. So Leah could be a picture of the church, that she was weak-eyed, she could only see so much, but she was actually really fruitful. But Rachel was barren. She didn't really have much fruit whatsoever. And you could say that there is a little picture that when Jacob did get Rachel, he still had to fulfill a 7-year period with her, which in typology, you could loosely say it's a picture of when God finally does return for that period of time that he has to fulfill with the Jews as a nation. You've got the tribulation period where he deals again with the Jewish nation. You can hold these things lightly, but there could be a little bit of typology between these two girls here. So to sum all this passage up, God allows the saint to go 450 miles to a man that's going to buffet him. He's going to be more shrewd, more cunning. But the purpose in all of this is that for 20 years, Jacob would actually start to see what he is really like in himself. Before he can be turned from a Jacob to an Israel, God has to work with this man. And he does that with all of our lives. There's situations that are not good. Moses had wilderness times. He had 40 years on his own before he was even called. Then he had 40 years of wandering and all the grumbling that went on. All of that was in his life. David, he had, after he was anointed king, he had 10 years period where, even though he was the anointed king, he was hunted. He was buffeted. He had to run and hide and all of that before God actually allowed him to take the throne. You go through all of the saints in the Bibles and you see that God does this with those that he treats as his sons, and we shouldn't expect anything different in our own lives. And we need to remember that we don't become, what Hebrews says, that we don't become discouraged, that we don't, what was the word? I'll just turn to it. One was discouraged and one was despising the working of God. That we don't despise these things nor to be discouraged. We need to hold on always to Philippians 1:6, that he who began a good work in you will continue the work that he has begun. And it's his purpose, just like he's doing with Jacob, to actually form us, to mold us. And in all of these things, it's for his purposes, it's for his glory. We are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus. So Jacob had 20 years of conflict in the home and in his workplace. And God allowed that whole period of time. He worked 14 years for nothing, for zip, for two wives. And it's only in the next 6 years that he actually starts to gain any possessions. And God blesses him. He makes sure that he walks out of Laban's care with more than he needs. But these 20 years were purposeful in the hand of God in changing the saint. So next time we will continue with Jacob's story. And I hope that you can glean something out of these passages. So, yeah. Okay. God bless, and we'll continue next time. Amen.